A reading from the book of Exodus. As Pharaoh drew near, the Israelites looked back, and there were the Egyptians advancing on them. In great fear, the Israelites cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have brought us and taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the very thing we told you in Egypt? Let us alone and let us serve the Egyptians? For it would have been much better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." But Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and see the deliverance that the Lord will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to keep still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the Israelites to go forward. You, lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the Israelites may go into the sea on dry ground." Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and turned the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. The Israelites went into the sea on dry ground, the waters forming a wall for them on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went into the sea after them, all of Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and chariot drivers. At the morning watch, the Lord, in the pillar of fire and cloud, looked down upon the Egyptian army and threw the Egyptian army into panic. He clogged their chariot wheels so that they turned with difficulty. The Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the Israelites, for the Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, so that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and chariot drivers." So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at dawn the sea returned to its normal depth. As the Egyptians fled before it, the Lord tossed the Egyptians into the sea. Israel saw the great work that the Lord did against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord and believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. The light shines in the darkness.
If you were with us on Sunday, you heard me remind us that this Exodus story is at the heart not just of the Jewish faith, but of our faith as followers of Jesus as well. Because this story is, in so many ways, a story of the human condition. A story in which we cry out for help. A story in which God sends salvation, brings us on a path to life, and then we want to go back to the very thing God was trying to rescue us from. That's why we are dedicating our Wednesday nights to this story, to hear week after week pieces of Israel's journey out of Egypt through the wilderness and into the promised land, because in so many ways it is our journey. As God delivers us from our own sin, from our own wilderness, and leads us into freedom. And so tonight, to start that, we are focusing on the first step of any wilderness journey, leaving. Leaving something behind and journeying into something new. But maybe leaving is not the right word. Maybe commencement would be a better word. So I remember at one point learning, I think when I was in high school, attending my high school commencement, right? And thinking this is the end of my high school journey, and then being told that commencement is the beginning, and thinking that that's a very silly word to use for something that marks the end of my high school journey. Little did I know that I was beginning just the rest of my life at this point. So perhaps this isn't Israel leaving tonight. Perhaps this is their commencement. It's the start of something new, the ending of one thing and moving in to another. Now, as a little background for our story, it's helpful to remember where we are at this point. We're in chapter 14 of Exodus. At this point, if you've been reading through the book so far, you know there have been the plagues, locusts, and boils, and bloody water, all that fun stuff. And then there's the plague of the firstborn and the Passover meal, and then the Spirit of God passes over the Israelites with their lamb's blood on the door. And Pharaoh has finally had enough and says, just go, get out of here. In fact, as they go, they ask all the Egyptians for their gold and silver and jewelry, and they plunder the Egyptians because the Egyptians are like, just take whatever you want, just get out of here, just go. And everything's going great. They're in the wilderness for a couple of days. They're journeying on their way. And then just before our story today, God says to Moses, turn around, make it look like you're lost, and then go back to this body of water. And when you get there, my glory is going to be revealed over Pharaoh. But first, you have to make it look like you're lost. Wouldn't be very hard for me, personally, but Moses is given this instruction to make it look like he's lost. And so they turn around, they backtrack to where they are tonight, on the border of this body of water that we've come to call the Red Sea. And there Pharaoh's army catches up to them. Now all this time, as they've been beginning this journey, a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire have been leading them, so they've been able to travel by day or by night. So mind you, let's just think about what the Israelites have witnessed at this point. They've seen God perform these miraculous plagues. They've watched God's Spirit pass over them and destroy the firstborns of the Egyptians. And they've been being led through the wilderness by a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire. And still they come to the Red Sea, and what's their first reaction? Why did you bring us out here to die? Were there no graves in Egypt that you had to lead us out into the wilderness so that we could die here? As if they hadn't been bearing witness to the wondrous works of God all along. Now, when I worked at camp, we used to have a measurement for how kids were doing, and we'd ask them if they were a happy llama, or if they were a sad llama, or if they were a tired llama. And then as a staff, we would point out when they were being drama llamas. Because sometimes when you're working with first graders and second graders who are tired and who miss their parents, they're just filled with drama. And at this point, Israel is being a bit of a drama llama, if you will. They're out in the middle of nowhere saying, "What? Why? Sure, there's a pillar of fire. Sure, there's a cloud leading us through this. But come, why'd you lead us out here to die?" And frankly, it was those drama llamas at camp that always had the same reaction that Israel did, because you'd be in the cabin for mandatory rest time for like 30 minutes out of a day, right? 30 minutes, just lay quietly in your bed for 30 minutes, and all they want to do is get up and go to the pool or go to the woods or go anywhere but be in their bed. They're begging, just get me out of here. And then 10 minutes after rest time is over, the first question out of their mouth, when can we go back to the cabin? When can I go back to the very place that I've been begging to get out of the entire time that you told me I had to stay there? Just as Israel wandering in the wilderness at the first sign of trouble, the first moment that it seems like maybe Moses doesn't know where he's going. Weren't we here already? Didn't we go here? Now we're against this body of water and Pharaoh's army's coming right down after. Why did you bring us out here? Wouldn't it have been better if we had died in Egypt? Didn't we tell you this from the start? We warned you that this is what was going to happen. Sure, we cried out. Sure, we wanted God to save us, but we told you it was better for us to just stay there. Sometimes that's what a commencement does to us. It puts us in a place where suddenly we're not comfortable with the reality that we're called to live into. Suddenly this new thing, which seemed like it was going to be wonderful, can be scary or intimidating or makes us feel unsure even of ourselves, and all we want to do is retreat to that thing that felt comfortable, even if it was the very thing that was holding us hostage, that was slowly killing us. Refugee and immigration class back in the fall, we started our class with a simple question of, I just wanted everyone in the room to think of a time when you had had to move from one place to another. Right? Most of us have had to move in our life. Think of a time when you had moved from one place to another. And tonight, I want us to think about that same question, but just reframed slightly. What's a time that you have had to leave something or someone behind? Think of that moment in your mind. What's a moment in time, a place in your history when you have had to leave something or someone behind because something new was calling to you? Now, by a show of hands, who has had to leave someone or something behind in their life? All right, excellent. That's good. That could have gone really bad, so I'm glad you all put your hands up. Thank you. All right, who has been tempted or who has actually gone back to the very thing that they were trying to leave? A few of you are honest. The rest of you are lying to yourselves. That's fine. Now, I want us to just shout out your answers to this for me. In a word or in a phrase, what is it that was appealing about going back to the thing that you were leaving behind? Familiarity. Maybe it'll be different this time. It tasted really good. All right. It's comfortable. We know it. Yeah, we already know it. Security, maybe. There's safety in something that we know. Now, just by shouting out your answers again, what is fear-inducing about going forward? The unknown. Like 75% of the room at one time, the unknown. And yet this is the very thing that God calls God's people to over and over and over again. We are a people who are always called forward into the new thing that God is doing. God called Abraham out of Ur, away from Abraham's family, away from everything that Abraham knew. Go into this new land that I will show you. God called the Israelites out of Egypt. God called the prophets to leave their home and go into Jerusalem to declare God's word to those people. God called the first disciples to leave their relatively promising career as fishermen or as tax collectors. God called Paul leave his role as a persecutor of the church. On and on the stories go. All of them faced challenges. None of them had an easy road when they followed God's call. And yet in the end, God fulfilled God's promise. And through bringing them into this new reality, made each of them a blessing to others. By drawing them out of what was familiar, drawing them out of what was comfortable and safe and known, by bringing them into this unknown, unfamiliar, unsure territory, God allowed them to be a blessing to all those who gathered around them. Think about that for a moment. Think about the ways in which you have been drawn into a new reality. And maybe you're not even aware of it yet, but how God is using you to bless people through that process. Yes, your journey might be difficult. You may have left everything behind. Yes, you may long to go back to Egypt where at least you had meat to eat. Yes, you might wish to just go back to the simple life of being a fisherman rather than constantly hiding from the authorities. On and on. Yes, you might wish to go back, and yet God is using you as you are drawn into this new thing to be a blessing to the nations. What a miraculous thing we are promised. And the best part of this whole story is that it's not even up to us. In the midst of Israel's deepest fear, when they're at their worst, when they're at their most drama-llama-y, Moses simply says this, "The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to keep still." And in fact, that's what God does. All the Israelites do is walk through the water. God brings the sea back on their left, on their right. God dries up the ground beneath their feet. God throws the Egyptian army into chaos. God brings the water back. God makes us
a blessing to those around us. When we are living into the new thing that God is doing, when we stop allowing ourselves to be governed by fear and trust in this new promise that God says, I'm going to do a new thing through you, when we give ourselves over to that promise, others are blessed by our very presence. Not because we're incredible, but because God is doing incredible things through us. You need only stand still, and God will fight for you. You know, for a variety of reasons, I've been thinking about death a lot lately. Some of you might have read my newsletter article where I was talking about this a little bit. It's a bit of an occupational hazard, right? That I'm with people who are experiencing death. I'm having conversations with people who have lost a loved one or who are going to die soon. And it seems like this is an apt analogy for our situation tonight. Because what is there that's more unknown, that's more uncertain, that is more perhaps terrifying than death? And yet all of us can point to a person or people who have blessed us in the way that in which they have lived and in the way in which they have died. By faithfully living into this new promise, knowing that God was doing a new thing, that this was not the end of the story. And there's nothing that we do in that moment. We breathe our last, and God takes care of the rest. And what a gift that is to us, to know that in our darkest hour, in the moments perhaps that we fear the most, God takes care of everything. That in that final commencement, we need only stand still, and God will fight for us, conquering death to the very end. God loves each of you, and I do too.